Hey, welcome in. Great to be back. I finally got all the recording gear sorted out, as they say. Talking with Jim McKinney right now. Jimmy and I are going to begin talking a bit about the situation in Israel. Jim, why don't you begin?
Well, this morning there's some new announcements that the Israelis have actually destroyed about 9 miles worth of underground tunnels that the Hamas terrorist organization that actually controls politically the Gaza Strip, as well as destroyed a number of top Hamas leaders' homes. There's a huge public relations campaign going on, from both sides. Israel, obviously talking about the missiles that the Hamas fired. And then, of course, Palestinians and Hamas claiming, killing innocent people and destroying and buildings and so forth. And of course, this weekend we had the destruction of the AP and I think it was Al Jazeera building in Gaza that was basically housing, according to Israeli sources, housing Hamas intelligence cells, as well as had fired rockets from the building, according to some video that had been previously published. So that's quite a big statement. AP came out, condemned it, but then the Israelis say, wait a second, you've known Hamas is in that building and they're using it as a military target. It's a legitimate target, so we warned you to get out. Anyway, that's quite a – there's an ongoing escalation of violence on both sides, and the Israelis look like they're going to force Hamas into some sort of submission before they stop. And Hamas is going to attempt to do everything they can to create the image to separate, in my view, from a political perspective. They're not just trying to gain power in the West Bank.
Yeah.
They're trying to separate the Arab countries that supported Israel from Israel in the Abraham Accords and the Trump administration. And I think they look at this as an opportunity from the Biden regime of basic weakness in supporting Iran. And I think the Biden administration has proven by giving $235 million to the Palestinians on April 21st, that they're willing to compromise with both the Palestinians. And of course, they've been in discussions with Iran trying to reestablish the JCPOA. So I think there's a power play going on here. The problem is there was peace breaking out, and I don't think that the Palestinians are going to get the same response. And clearly some countries are coming out and condemning Hamas and allowing Israel to defend itself and saying they should, including Germany, announcing that they supported Israel, which is a strong statement from one of the most powerful EU countries.
Well, I got to tell you, what I think is really interesting, Jimmy, about this whole situation is for the majority of the Trump administration, take out the word for, put in the word during, the situation in the Middle East was, I would have to say, I don't want to call it docile, but I would have to say it was a lot different than it is right now. What are your comments about that?
Yeah, I think, well, it was very clear, move towards peace. There were four Arab nations that signed accords, not only diplomatic relations, but economic opening between Israel and those Arab nations.
Right.
And there were a large number that were willing to continue on that route. Now, that was directly against both Iranian desires as well as Palestinian terrorist organizations, including Hamas. And I really think that's what the bigger pressure is right here, is to continue to separate and not allow that peace and try to reestablish the victimhood of the Palestinians. And it may work, but we'll see what happens. It looks to me like Israel and Netanyahu are going all out to take Hamas down.
Well, Netanyahu was on the talk shows over the weekend, which I think is interesting. And I really have to wonder what this is going to do, if anything, to the relationship between the current executive branch and Israel. I'm a little bit concerned about that. And the main reason I say that, Jimmy, is that I'm firmly convinced that Trump did exactly the right thing during his administration in terms of, Oh, for basically having a decent, sensible relationship between Israel and the United States. I don't understand at all why the current executive branch is taking the actions that they are currently taking, for example, toward the Iranians. I mean, I would have to say, you have to wonder how much does the AOC group, how much influence do they have in this deal?
I think it's actually former Obama administration officials that have, basically control that have the control of the Biden regime. And I believe those officials, they want to prove that their policies were right, in spite of the fact that they were not doing very well. In fact, they were actually great problems in the region. But I think they wanted to reestablish those ideologies, reestablish those relationships based on what their past experience was. And now it's becoming clear that they were very negative. And I agree with you. I think it's a problem that they're failing to recognize the success of the previous administration, of the Trump administration, in actually working a peace process. And they basically put that in flames. But not only have they done that internationally, in the Middle East, they've also done it domestically, because the Ilhan Omars and the Rashida Tlaibs and the AOCs have been standing up and creating, pretty strong vocal statements against Israel. And that puts the Democratic Party in a very precarious position, because a lot of the New York, senior and very powerful lobbyists for Israel are Democrats. And now you're going to see a divide here, and they don't know what to do with it. And I think it's a disastrous set of policies and a very big problem for this administration, for the Biden regime to manage. And I think they're not doing it very well, which is probably why they lift mask mandates last week, because of, really bad optics on what they're doing in the Middle East.
Well, it's a great example about of how the administration, the current administration, is shifting people's attention away from international affairs to domestic affairs. Let's talk about the situation with the masks. It kind of hit up here anyway, in my opinion, fairly quickly. I am now going into stores and I don't even get asked to wear a mask anymore. Is that good or bad? Well, as far as I'm concerned, I've had both the shots, and if in fact the immunization proves to be effective, I'm very happy that I don't have to wear a mask anymore. What are your thoughts on that, Jimmy?
Well, I think that our governor, Jay Inslee, as well as a lot of senior leaders in the Democratic Party, have been pushing this agenda for control for such a long period of time. When you drop the mask mandate, that basically means the emergency is over. If the emergency is over, then they have to go back to legislative processes based on constitutionalities in both state and at the federal level. When that happens, they've lost that power. And I think it's been very tough for them to give it up. So the mask is symbolic of that power. And by losing that, and I think a lot of the governors, I know a lot of them were stunned when the Biden administration flip-flopped last week. The head of the CDC on one day says, "Hey, masks, got to wear them." And the next day says, "Okay, you don't need masks if you've been vaccinated and if you're out in the open." And they were stunned by it because they don't know how to manage it. But the reality is, vast majority of people now are fed up with it, and so many people have gotten vaccinated. So what difference does it make if, in fact, there is some success in the vaccine? And I'm still, questioning the cost versus benefit on that at all, based on the numbers. But if that's the case, then why are you continuing down this road? And I actually think it comes right back down to Anthony Fauci. Anthony Fauci's connection with gain of function research in the Wuhan lab in China, and his attempts to cover up and eradicate this virus before they get caught for what they did, through either accidental or an intentional modifications of this virus that escaped or has created such pandemonium around the world and created so much death.
Well, when you bring Fauci's name up on that, you really think that he had something to do with this pandemic?
Oh, absolutely, he
Do
did.
you?
And in my mind, and not only in my mind, but basically, his organization under the National Institute of Health and his, you know, his NAIAD, the Infectious Disease Organization, they actually funded research for gain of function on these SARS types virus in the Wuhan lab, and they did it through cutouts when it was restricted by Congress, and they gave themselves an exception. They gave an exception, a very specific exception, and they went ahead and funded through that. Now, Fauci is denying that in a roundabout way, but the documentation and the actual doctors that are involved have made public statements just prior to the COVID release on how effective they were in doing this manipulation. So I think he will face, over time, the truth will come out. He's going to face a tremendous backlash because of, this is my opinion. He's going to face backlash because of what they've done, because inevitably people are going to say, wait a second, how many people have died? What's gone on here? And where did this come from? And if we do more research and we look deeper, we're going to see the smoking guns comes back to, you know, CDC and NIH funding.
Jimmy, I simply, as just utilizing common sense, I don't understand the rationale between Fauci being a part of that. Explain it to me in your opinion, if you would. What is your opinion on this?
No, Fauci is the head of the institute that for the U.S. government that funded this type of research. If, in fact, the research led to an escaped virus that created this pandemonium, then whose responsibility is it? It was very risky research. The U.S. government actually stopped funding, I believe, in 2015 and said, hey, this is too risky. But then they wrote an exemption that allowed Fauci and the National Institute of Health to circumvent that restriction so they could continue funding for national security or danger expansion. And I think my belief, and this is an opinion, I believe he thought he was doing wonders in order to protect, well, to be able to create, okay, I don't think he's doing wonders. I think he was attempting to create a virus that they could use to build vaccines, and the vaccines could be for the pharmaceutical companies that could make a fortune by selling the vaccines if these viruses showed up in another form later. And I think I believe it was probably a mistake that it escaped from the lab. But I think that mistake has now led to, there's no question, billions and billions of dollars to the main pharmaceuticals to create these vaccines without indemnity, without any legal responsibility, protected by the government in order to protect something that was actually potentially funded by the U.S. government.
Yeah, you make a very good point when you add the issue of non-liability. But I have to tell you, I really don't think, in my opinion, okay, that there's no point whatsoever in doing that. I mean, it's, why would the U.S. want to increase the top line and bottom line of the vaccine manufacturers? What's the point of that?
Well, I don't think the U.S. government wanted to do that, but Anthony Fauci actually has patents, a large number of patents, in conjunction with these pharmaceutical groups. So he may have been, there may be twofold interests. The first is, the justification is, if these viruses evolve to a more, and what we saw with the original SARS virus, with a more dangerous virus, so we want to be prepared in case that happens. So there's some justification for doing research in order to create viruses, in their minds, to create more risky viruses that would actually hurt, you know, people more dramatically. And then we want to be prepared for that and be able to have some sort of ability to stop it. Now, the sad part, and the second part of that, is there's potential financial gain, especially if you've created those, done that research, and you've got some financial capability or connection with the patents, and the pharmaceutical industries get those. So initially, no one really knew what was happening here with this, and people and the Trump administration really broke new ground in creating the vaccines very rapidly. But at the same time, if that vaccine was created by, and I'm saying if it was created in order to to protect against a virus that was developed in order to build vaccines.
Yeah.
There's a problem in my view. And I think there's no question the amount of lobbying, the amount of influence that pharmaceuticals have in this nation right now. And then, of course, the media propaganda supporting the vaccine efforts, it's astounding. In 1976, the U.S. government pushed through its same methods that it's doing right now, through media campaigns, getting, actors and everybody involved in order to take the swine flu virus. 45 million people took the shot. I think less than 100 people actually had adverse reactions. Like, I think somewhere around 45 or 50 died from it, and they stopped it. We've had a lot more people die from these viruses right now. We've got a lot of reactions that are not being talked about. Way more, because the pharmaceuticals and the influencers are out there still pushing this agenda. And one of the key elements, one of the key people, the spokesperson, Anthony Fauci.
Yeah, let me say this. We're way over time right now. We're over 16 minutes. So let me say this. I don't agree with that, but so what? We have free speech, free thought, obviously, in the United States. You guys out there, what do you think? Is that something that is feasible in your mind? Bring it up on the blog today. Jimmy, always a pleasure. Thank you, sir.
You bet.